This is the Todd Wright Toddcast. It is presented by Brandon Legal Group. They are your full-service law firm. You need not live, work, nor have your legal issue located in the city limits of Brandon, Florida, to reach out to Brandon Legal Group at any point for a free consult. 844-4-BLG-4ME. 844-4-BLG-4ME. And some always want to ask about a law firm, what type of law do they specialize in? Just know that Brandon Legal Group is a full service law firm. You need not ask that question. Again, just call them for a free consult when you are in need of legal assistance as they service the greater Tampa Bay area. 844-4-BLG-4ME or visit brandonlegalgroup.com. Let me also talk about Pin Chasers. I think the late night specials are terrific at Pin Chasers. I have taken various people, either individually or groups, to Pin Chasers for the last year now, and everyone says, when are we going back? It's very enjoyable. There are three locations in the Tampa Bay area, 6816 Gale Boulevard in Zephyr Hills, 4847 North Armenia in Midtown Tampa, 5555 West Hillsborough Avenue, just on the other side of Hillsborough Avenue from the tip of the landing strip on the north end of Tampa International Airport. And as I like to do for my friends at 1025 The Bone, Drew Garabo's Down to Bowl event, with all proceeds benefiting Down Syndrome Association, is coming up on Saturday, February 29th. It is specific to the Pin Chasers Midtown location. I have obviously had a good relationship with Anthony Peroni for a while. The relationship Anthony has with Drew Garabo and The Bone even predates me. So I am supporting Drew's event at Anthony's facility and want to send you out there. You can buy a foursome for $200. You can also buy an individual spot for $65 for this fundraiser. And remember, they have 50 lanes at the North Armenia location, which is also basically the home office for Anthony and Pin Chasers. So it's a maximum capacity event on leap year, Saturday, February 29th. So just a little over a month away. Go to 1025thebone.com to find out more information and to register. I think it's 1025thebone/downtobowl. You will find it either at the first address I gave or the more specific address. And I wish Drew and Anthony all the best with that event. When last I spoke to you, I was catching you up on the fire in my condominium building, the displaced residents, how I called in Papa John's of Tampa Bay to help feed the American Red Cross volunteers and other displaced people and local firemen. And I also said I hadn't been feeling well and had no connection to the fire at all. Many of you around the holidays fell ill. I avoided it through the holidays, and then sure enough, right after the holidays, it hit me really hard. So while I have continued to do my television appearances and my webcast on the Identity Tampa Bay, those were only a few minutes at a time, and I'm trying to catch up with podcasts now, especially that we are officially into Super Bowl week. And I just want to take a few moments, if you will allow me to, because I never really got to talk about what happened in the conference championship games and what I think is sort of a unique element of, at least to the point where I'm recording this podcast on Sunday evening, as it relates to the public opinion of Super Bowl 54 itself. First of all, I want to give credit where credit is due to ProFootballTalk.com. They don't get everything right, but it is one of my key sources of information. Obviously, when I did national radio, I did weekly segments, first with Mike Florio and then with the editor-in-chief, Michael David Smith. And one of the things that they brought up leading up to the NFC Championship game, actually even before the Packers defeated the Seattle Seahawks, was the whole element of, if the Niners did defeat the Vikings, which they did soundly in that first playoff game on the divisional playoff weekend, what might that create in terms of an attitude in the mind of the Green Bay Packers, considering they had been beaten so soundly, a month and a half before, out in San Francisco on national television? Now, ironically, I'm praising ProFootballTalk.com, but at the same time, around 24, 48 hours before the NFC Championship game was played, there was a story I didn't even bother clicking on it on ProFootballTalk.com, basically saying that the game between the Niners and Packers was closer than it seemed. I didn't click on it because I disagreed. I just said, no, it wasn't close. I watched it. It was very one-sided. And look, this next game may be different, but don't try to tell me something that I do not believe. I didn't think there was anything in that story that I needed to read. And clearly the second meeting between the two went a lot like the first one. It reminded me of a few years prior when the Packers went into Dallas and they defeated the number one seed Cowboys in the divisional playoffs in one of the best games I've ever seen, where the Cowboys kept coming from behind with rookie Dak Prescott and rookie Ezekiel Elliott. But in the end, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers just kept putting up enough points, and it was a walk-off Mason Crosby field goal, and the Packers won 34-31. And then they went to Atlanta, and they just didn't have it. There was an early fumble by their fullback as he was presumably going towards the end zone, and some other things that went against the Packers. And there didn't seem to be a lot of fight in the Packers in that particular game. And this NFC Championship game looked a lot like that, when some things, not many, but just enough, went against the Packers early. It didn't seem at any point like the Packers really pushed back or gave you a reason to think that they were in the football game. Honestly, as a Cowboy fan, that makes me feel a little bit better about the Cowboys bringing in Mike McCarthy, because as I've said at length, even before the Cowboys hired McCarthy, the Packers last season, 2018, quit on Mike McCarthy. It resulted in a home loss to a bad Arizona Cardinals team that was going to fire their coach a few weeks later, and I think it was the Packers taking the lead from their leader in Aaron Rodgers that we don't want to play for this head coach anymore. We don't believe in him, and we need somebody else. And Matt LaFleur came in, and the wins were there. The division title was there. A playoff win was there against the Seattle Seahawks. But wasn't it even LaFleur that said in the days after the Packer lost the 49ers that, I'm paraphrasing here, there wasn't enough fight in his football team. One of the concerns I had going into the playoffs about the Packers and why I just didn't feel they were a Super Bowl championship team was because the optics just weren't there to me. And the path wasn't there either, with them going back to San Francisco to play a team that was clearly more physical than them and made it very easy as you can make winning an NFC Championship game. So there are some thoughts on Packers and 49ers. The early game from Conference Championship Sunday, I think, was a lot closer than, not than the score, final score indicated. I went back. You know, NFL Network often reruns playoff games. And I went back and I watched the second quarter in particular of the Titans and Chiefs game, because the Titans jumped out early. They took the lead. They put up 17 points. They had a 9-plus minute drive to open the second quarter and threw a tackle-eligible play. Very creative game planning. Remember earlier in the playoffs, we had the jump pass from Derrick Henry. What the Titans were doing, or what the Titans did against the Patriots, worked. Against the Ravens, worked. And for the first 24 minutes against the Chiefs, it also worked. You go back and you look at what happened after that, and sorry if there's proof that my voice is still bothering me. There was a defensive holding penalty against the Titans. I'm not saying it was the wrong call, but it was a call that went against the Titans where they actually had made a play that I believe would have forced a third and long for the Chiefs deep in their own end. And it was the start to the Chiefs gaining some momentum by being able to, and Patrick Mahomes finding some holes in the secondary of the Titans, while at the same time the Titans pass rush it wasn't strong enough. There were too many times where the Titans allowed Patrick Mahomes to do whatever he wanted to do, whether he was not being hit behind the line of scrimmage or on that run late in the first half where he ended up scoring that touchdown, and no Titans took him down. But I think there were moments, and again, the first 24 minutes of that game, I understand an NFL game is a minimum of 60 minutes unless a team quits early, like say the Packers did against the 49ers, but the Titans had things going their way, and then just some things went the Chiefs' way. The Chiefs made their own breaks, may have made some adjustments. Steve Spagnuolo, of course, was brought in as the new defensive coordinator, because even when the Chiefs go down and score that touchdown and make it 17 to 14 at that point, I apologize. Remember, there was a play, and Nance and Romo talked about this, where to stop Derrick Henry in a, it was I think a third and one or a third and two type situation after the Chiefs had cut it to three, where Spagnuolo basically put in his goal line defense. He was selling out. And he was saying, nope, we're going to put our best unit on the field right now because we think there's a very high percentage that you're going to hand the ball to Derrick Henry. And you know what? We don't want you to do that. So if you want to take your chances with Ryan Tannehill, who clearly the switch to him has been good for your football team, but we're going to make you put the ball more in his hands on plays like this, and Tannehill wasn't able to do it. So it was little things in those final like 6 minutes of the first half that I think swung the momentum back to the Chiefs, and then suddenly the Titans they're not in front of the chains, they're playing a little uphill, and things might have caught up to them. So they let it get away. You might make the argument, and you might be right, that what the Titans were doing and what they did, you know, if they had eliminated the Chiefs, they would have in succession taken out Brady, multi-time league MVP, right? Lamar Jackson, this year's league MVP, Patrick Mahomes, last year's league MVP. So I just don't think the Titans in their game plan had a lot of room for error. They executed it flawlessly for two games and 24 minutes, and then just a few things got away from them, and it allowed the Chiefs to get on that run that they got on the previous week against the Texans, and something that they are clearly capable of doing. Looking ahead, and we have plenty more podcasts to do that, I do see a bit of a correlation in the Chief matchup against the Titans and the Chief matchup against the 49ers, where the way the Titans put themselves in the best position was by being physical, by running the ball, de-emphasizing the risk in the passing game, because Garoppolo has barely thrown the ball in the postseason, kind of like Tannehill did. The Niners just run it, and have in these playoffs. So I see a comparison there, which is why I also think the Chiefs opened as a favorite in this game, have maintained being a favorite, albeit a very small one. And as I talked about in my webcast last week, the odds makers seem to be very resistant to giving the Niners more than that 1 or 1.5 points, because the minute one of the books went to 2, one of the biggest bets on the Super Bowl the first week of the 2 came in on the Niners to get that second point, which means they cover in the case of where the Chiefs, say, win by 1. Or there's a push if they win by a 2-point conversion or a 2-point conversion failing. The other part of this matchup that interests me is how it seems like for a week, and granted, there doesn't seem to be any bad blood between the Niners and the Chiefs. The ironic part was that this was the game that early in the 2018 season was where Jimmy Garoppolo blew out his knee, and some are now saying it worked out for the Niners because with Garoppolo going out, they struggled to the point where they were able to land Bosa as the number 2 pick in the draft, sort of like the year, if you go all the way back to when the San Antonio Spurs lost David Robinson, ended up in the NBA lottery, and won the right to pick Tim Duncan, someone that clearly Rick Pitino and Celtics apologists were counting on if they won the lottery to bring to the Boston Celtics. They're making some correlations there, or at least I'm making the comparison to the Spurs and what it meant for setting up the Spurs. The Chiefs haven't won a Super Bowl in 50 years. The Niners haven't won a Super Bowl in 25 years. So it's not like these teams have been frequenting the game and anybody was like, oh, hey, I don't want to see them again. Because there seems to be a low tolerance that fans have. If you're not a fan of a particular team, you want to see something new. You want to see something different. And at least from the Chiefs' standpoint, for the better part of 2 years, football fans like watching Patrick Mahomes. Now, I'm sure you don't like watching him when he's playing against your team or if you're in the AFC West, but he's an exciting performer. And now we get to see him on the big stage after he lost in the AFC Championship game last year, remember, in an overtime situation where he didn't get the ball. And from the Niners' standpoint, I just think the Niners have been so good all year, and even in the games where they lost, they basically lost either on the last play or one possession. It was a one possession game where there's this feeling of, yeah, you know what? The Niners earned the right to be the top team in the NFC. They were dominant in both playoff games. We're okay with seeing them in the Super Bowl since they haven't won a Super Bowl in a long time. And I'm sure there are pockets of fan bases that hate the Chiefs, hate the Niners, and it doesn't matter whether they've been good or bad. But I think nationally, people are content with the matchup, or as we've seen with memes on social media immediately after the game, this little sliver of people rooting for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, this little sliver of people rooting for the Niners in the Super Bowl, and the rest of the circle is people who hate the Patriots or just didn't want to see the Patriots in the game again. So maybe there's something to be said for that, and the fact that last year's Super Bowl was such a freaking dud. And I talked about this on Spectrum Bay News 9 in Tampa Bay just last week. We were asked what we thought was the best Super Bowl game in the first 53 and the worst Super Bowl game in the last 53. And obviously, I can make multiple cases for many games being the best or being the worst. But one of the ones I brought up was last year's. Last year, after a very exciting season, it was just a game that produced very little excitement. The only thing I remember from the game are two things. Sony Michel scored the only touchdown. One touchdown was scored, and it was set up by a big play, the last one in the careers of Brady to Gronkowski. Of course, not Brady's career, but them together. That was it. That was the game. Okay, well, I also remember the Jared Goff, the one time he needed to make a throw to an open receiver right down the middle of the field, he couldn't make the throw. He threw a duck, he underthrew it, and couldn't make the play. And I'll remember that until Jared Goff gives me a reason to think of something else he did that overcomes that. But other than that, what else did you have from Super Bowl 53? So maybe that is in with people's thinking that they feel cheated, that they didn't really get anything out of last year's game, so they've been waiting for something else to give them the payoff that they expected last year on the unofficial American holiday. All right, that's enough for my voice for this particular podcast. Again, I thank Pin Chasers. Remember to visit pinchasers.net and go to 1025thebone.com for more information on Drew Garabo's Down to Bull and when you are in need of legal assistance. Brandon Legal Group, brandonlegalgroup.com, 844-4BLG4ME. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Todd Wright Toddcast. I'm going to rest my voice, and I'll talk to you again very soon.